Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today we're having a conversation about intellectual property, or IP as it's commonly known, and specifically how to protect the intellectual property assets of the practice. I'm going to be joined by intellectual property lawyer Chris Round, who is a partner at K&L Gates in Melbourne, and he's the guy that I go to help me protect my own intellectual property assets. We cover a variety of different types of intellectual property, whether it's business names, logos, copyright, patents, registrations, and the like. And there are a couple of key lessons here for the savvy business owner. It's really, really important to protect your intellectual property. And one of the key messages out of this is don't take it lightly, because I guarantee you, once you've had some intellectual property pinched, as I have in the past, it is incredibly frustrating, it's incredibly disheartening, and there's not much you can do about it after the fact. So my strong advice to you is to really listen into what Chris is saying, take some great notes, and then get some professional help to protect the intellectual property assets in your practice so that you don't have to go through some of the painful lessons that I went through. So without any further ado, here's Chris Round. Chris Round from knlgates.com. How are you, mate?
I'm excellent. How are you, Jesse?
Oh, really well. And look, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. I know as an IP lawyer and protecting IP is something that you kind of do day in, day out, and it probably seems very familiar to you. But for most people listening to this podcast, it's going to feel a little bit like another world. So I'm just wondering if you could just give us a bit of an overview of what it is that we're protecting in terms of our IP. What sort of things do you typically encounter in a small business sense that would really resonate with dentists more, you know, generally?
The most important thing for any small business is their brand. And people get confused between business names, company names, trademarks, and domain names. And from my perspective, the most important of those four things is the trademark. Now, a small business needs to register a business name with ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission, so that they're permitted to trade under a certain name. If you are Chris Round and you want to trade as Chris's Dentistry, you have to register that business name with ASIC. You also have to register your company name with ASIC. But those registrations provide very little intellectual property protection. They don't stop any other trader from using a similar name. So what I do in my business is assist businesses to register trademarks, which give a business a monopoly in the particular trademark that's registered and trademarks that are deceptively similar to that trademark. The fourth thing, of course, is domain names, and they're very important to register. But if you get a .com and you don't get a .com.au or you get a .co or whatever, it doesn't matter. You end up building the reputation in whatever domain name you choose. So in the end, the trademark is the one you want to get.
Yeah, okay. So that's what really affords that brand protection. And I guess just speaking of brands, because when you talk to lots of dentists, as you do and I do, there seems to be some confusion as what's the difference between a brand and my goodwill? And I just wondered if you had a perspective around what actually a brand is, what it is that we're trying to protect here.
Yeah, so the brand is the sign that you use to distinguish your services from those of other traders. So, I mean, that's really the definition of a brand. Now, that can be your name, that can be your logo. In the context of other businesses, that can be packaging design, that can be colors, it can be sounds. But really for the dentist, it's the name of their practice and the logo that they use. Now, goodwill is a bit different, because goodwill, of course, is an accounting value that's put on intellectual property. Now, for example, many people know who I am, and they know that I work at K&L Gates. But some people just come to me because I'm me. And I'm sure many of your dentists, it doesn't matter what they trade under, people will come to them because they're looking for them. Other dentists, of course, will buy into a practice that's traded under the name for 50 years. And it's that name that has the goodwill, name that has the reputation and the value, as opposed to their personal name.
So really, it's about protecting the business name as compared to the personal name of the individual practitioner or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. So when it comes to protecting intellectual property, obviously we'll talk about the different types of intellectual property. You've already spoken about the business name, you've spoken about the logo and other things. But when it comes to protecting the intellectual property, this seems to be something, at least my reading of the tea leaves, Chris, probably different from a lawyer's perspective, but it seems to me that the dental profession is really only just catching on to the importance of this, whereas some time ago, the whole concept of trademarking might have seemed a little bit of an overkill. Is that just something that I'm sensing, or is it a growing awareness of the need to protect one's intellectual property assets?
I think there's a growing appreciation generally, Jesse, across lots of industries, not just this industry, of the importance of trademark protection. A lot of times, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, people would have not filed a trademark application because they would have perceived that to be something that they didn't require when running a small business. But now people understand that the limited expenditure on registration, the monopoly that you get is so powerful that it really prevents competitors from adopting the same name. And, you know, with everyone being on the internet these days, you want to ensure that your name stands out from the crowd, and that there's not six businesses using the same name as you.
Yeah, absolutely. And even on that, I guess one of the things that I've certainly experienced when I put things out on the internet, and I start talking about certain things and I didn't have that trademark or that protection, it's been lifted and copied and modified by someone else. So much so that other person is now recognized for the word that I started using before they did. And it, I must say, when it happens, you just kick yourself and die a thousand deaths.
Well, the difference between protecting your trademark and having someone like me write a letter of demand based on a trademark registration, and when you're trying to rely on just your reputation under the Australian consumer law, is chalk and cheese. If you have a trademark registration, all you have to do is show that the other person is using the mark that's the same as or similar to your mark, and they'll be required by a court to stop. But if you don't have a trademark and you're trying to show your business has a reputation in a name, it's very difficult, very difficult.
So the onus of proof is much more tricky in that situation.
Much more tricky, much more expensive.
Yeah, and less likely to succeed. So that ultimately, you know, having that trademark gives you a bit more certainty, a bit more clarity, and ultimately a whole lot more protection as well. So I wanted to ask you about social media profiles, because there could be a business across the other side of the world that has a similar name to my dental practice, for instance, or someone else's dental practice. How do you get around the social media profile thing? Because it seems to be a bit of a first-in, best-dressed scenario.
So trademark registration occurs on a country-by-country basis. So if we have a registration for our practice name in Australia and someone in Birmingham has the same practice name, Birmingham, Alabama, or Birmingham, England, that doesn't matter. They can trade and you can trade, and there's no trademark infringement. But of course, when we get to social media, the Twitter handle, there's only one Twitter handle. And so if I don't get Chris's Dentist or Chris's Dental or whatever because someone's got it from the Ukraine, if they've got a valid reason to have it, there's no reason why I'm entitled to get it. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram will not stop someone who has a valid reason to use a social media handle just because I want it.
If you had the trademark in your country, would that give you any more leverage or just not at all?
If you have a trademark in your country and the person has a trademark in their country.
Yeah, it's just too bad.
Too bad.
What if you've got one and they don't?
Then those three organizations have different policies. Facebook and Instagram are better at pulling things down than Twitter. But, you know, if you've got a website, or sorry, a Twitter handle that makes people think you're Gucci, and you don't say in your bio that I'm fake Gucci and I'm a parody site, Twitter will suspend that account. So the problem is in this game is really, I mean, it's hard to think that someone's going to set up a fake Twitter handle based on someone's dental practice in Sydney and then start tweeting away. But if it was to occur, Twitter will take action.
Yeah, cool. So obviously there's some things that people need to go through to get a trademark approved. What is the process? What are the steps involved? Because for most of us, this is not our everyday world, and it can seem a little overwhelming, a little daunting. What is the actual process?
It's not overwhelming and daunting. You know, I mean, this is what I do every day.
Yeah, it's your bread and butter, right?
For global brands, for little people, for everyone in between. So the dental game seems to have, in my experience, having now worked in this area for a while, there's two sorts of names people adopt. They either adopt their suburb and the word dental, and we'll talk about those ones, or they adopt a totally distinctive name that has no correlation to the, you know, the place where the person trades. And when I spoke at the Dental Owners Conference last year, I made up a name and I used it. And I thought it was pretty funny. Chris Round Smile Town, right? So that was that name I made up, and people seemed to think it was pretty funny. So that name is distinctive, right? Smile Town. That's a distinctive name. It's not a name that other traders have to use in the running of their business. And therefore, IP Australia should give that trademark to me if I was to try and register that. The contrast is, and where people in the industry have problems with trademark registration, is where you're trying to register a suburb name and then the word dental or dental practice or whatever. And in that context, IP Australia will say other traders from that suburb, that place, should be entitled to use that word unless you have traded in that name for such a long time that you have acquired distinctiveness and therefore everyone is aware of your reputation in that name. And so if a person comes along with a new practice and starts a practice in 2018 with a name like Melbourne Dental, that practice will take decades before they have sufficient reputation to get a registration for that name. So Melbourne Dental will never be able to stop Melbourne Dentist or Melbourne Orthodontist or Melbourne X. And so I've helped a number of traders recently, and I've had some success getting some suburb dentist names registered, and some haven't been able to show IP Australia enough usage so that IP Australia will let them get the monopoly. IP Australia is very careful about wanting to give someone ownership of a particular suburb. If we're thinking about a beer example, Carlton Draft, and that beer's been around for 100 years.
And it still tastes awful.
It still tastes awful, but you couldn't have a Carlton ale,
no,
right?
No.
Because Carlton Draft's been around so long. But if you were to make a beer up now in 2018 and you were to call that beer, well, there's a Melbourne Bitter. Sydney Draft, right? IP Australia is not going to let someone have a monopoly in the word Sydney. And it's the same with dental practices. If you come up with suburb dental and you've only been trading for 4 years and someone else comes up with suburb dentistry, it's very difficult to stop that second person.
And I guess that kind of leads to why some people do that. I think a lot of people are trying to get the URL because they think it's going to be a little more friendly to the search engine. So if I've got suburbdental.com.au or .com or whatever it is, and then someone's got samesuburbdentistry.com, I think the rationale at the outset is to think, well, how can I get traffic through the search engines? and go from there. So therefore, they then go, oh, let me try and protect that brand accordingly. But as you say, there are some fundamental difficulties that IP Australia, and I imagine around the world, would have as well, because this is an international audience. I'm sure the rules would be rather similar to protect a suburb in other countries as well.
If our audience is English-speaking countries, New Zealand would be even harder to get a suburb. Europe would be nearly impossible. The UK would be very difficult, and the US would be very difficult, and so would Canada. So, you know, those major English-speaking countries, South Africa, same issues. And so what you'd end up doing there is have to protect the logo. So you'd have Suburb Dental logo, and that would give you a registration and give you some protection, but that logo protection is not going to give you necessarily a monopoly in your suburb name. So my preference as a branding person would be to use that Smiletown example. If I'm Smiletown based in Melbourne and I have enough references to Melbourne and dentistry on my website, Google will find me when someone types in Melbourne Dental. And of course, you could buy Melbourne Dental as an AdWord. Now, that's obviously expensive, but even on free search, the fact that my business is not called Melbourne Dental, if it's called Smiletown, but there's enough references to Melbourne, Google will find me. But of course, the audience is going to want instant success. So if you're the first dentist in a suburb, the natural thing is to try and claim that suburb name.
So then claim the suburb name as a URL, because Google does like a keyword domain name at the moment until there's another algorithm change. But then you can have your branding around whatever your practice name could be, even if it's on a slightly different URL. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. You could definitely buy suburbdental.com, but you trade it as Smiletown. It gives you the best of both worlds. The problem, of course, is if you buy suburbdental.com, you trade as Smiletown, and the next guy comes along as suburbdental.co, you can't stop that.
No, you can't. And I guess that's where you try and buy up some domains as best you can as well.
Yeah, but the days of buying 300 domain names, Jesse, and thinking that's going to help you are done.
I know. And equally, I think that over time, Google's going to be getting even more brighter than it currently is, and the SEO value in a keyword domain name will diminish over time, because they want to see relevance, not necessarily just a keyword-rich domain name. So I suspect that will probably lose a little bit of influence over time as well. But you know, there are people far better qualified than I to make a definite comment in that space. But one of the things I wanted to ask you around this is, okay, so we know the process really is talk to someone who's qualified in that area. And then what is it that you do at your end to register a trademark? What is it that's happening in our 6-minute increments to get the mark protected?
A good trademark lawyer will charge you a set fee. But first of all, when you take the instructions, you want to make sure that the trademark is not going to be infringing someone else's mark, right? The very first thing generally is to run a search to make sure that our new client is not infringing someone else. Now, once we've decided they're not infringing, we file an application with IP Australia to register the trademark, and IP Australia will examine the mark in about 4 months' time. And the two major things they examine for are distinctiveness, so the issue we were talking about, the suburb dental, and the second issue is the mark deceptively similar to other marks that are already on the register? Now, if it is deceptively similar to another mark, there are ways of getting around it, but it obviously creates more difficulty to get it registered.
And look, Chris, you know, certainly in the work that I've done with you, you've been extraordinarily helpful getting some of my stuff registered, which I am eternally grateful to you for.
Thank you.
Well, seriously, but there was some challenges with some of the things that we're trying to do, and I know that it wasn't a clear cut, you know, case to get some of our stuff done. But one of the things I just wanted to explore is the common mistakes, and I guess one of the most common mistakes you're probably going to tell me is having something that you're trying to register that is deceptively similar to someone else's, or similar enough that it's hard to get registered. But where else do people come unstuck when it comes to protecting their IP?
Well, the most common way they get unstuck in this game for this industry is they pick a name that's not distinctive, and then they find they can't get it registered at all. So that's like problem number one. Problem number two is that there are only so many ways to describe your practice, and therefore, without searching being undertaken, you can find that a reputation that you're trying to build in your name is actually the same as someone else in Perth or in some other part of your own country. And therefore, there's that infringement risk. And if you are the second in time, you can never beat the first in time.
So that comes back to the concept of prior use, right?
Correct.
So just walk me through from a perspective. If I've got a trademark, I want to register, but there's someone else who is using similar name or whatever, even if it's in a different location or whatever, that prior use could potentially, you know, bring me unstuck and being able to register that.
Correct. So Australia is a first to use jurisdiction rather than a first to file jurisdiction. And so are all the other English speaking countries. And that means that if you first used your mark in 2010 and I come along and I file a trademark in 2014 for the same mark and the first person files their application in 2017, but they actually used it from 2010, then they're the real and true owner of the mark. And so the 2014 company can never stop the 2010 company. And that's why it's important to run searching and to ensure that, you know, the trademark register is clean for your name, and then also run common law searching to have a look at business names, company names, domain names, and of course, usages on the internet generally using Google.
So one of the things I just wanted to ask as well, though, in that scenario, Chris, if you are the first person and you have not protected your brand, and then someone comes along and is the second user, can you retroactively protect your brand, or is the horse bolted?
You can retroactively file a trademark in that circumstance and potentially get your mark registered, but it becomes difficult to
ask them to change,
enforce, because, yeah, you'd have to then get a court to argue, it's a court to find that you were the first user and the other company was, in fact, an infringer. It's just a bit messy. I mean, I can talk for hours about prior users and all those things, but to your audience, it's all legal stuff and it's wasted money. The important thing is pick a brand that's distinctive and get that thing on the trademark register. And once it's on the trademark register, you're pretty much good as gold.
Yeah, lovely. So that's the take-home message. All right, so my next question is, I've got my trademark registered. How long does that last? Is it in perpetuity or is it something that we need to renew?
Yeah, so it's registered for a 10-year period from the date of filing, and it's renewable every 10 years for the payment of a fee. And the fee is $400 a class, so it's not much. Basically, it could be registered forever if you just keep paying the fee every 10 years.
It's a pity you can't pay up 50 years in one go.
If you use an intellectual property firm like mine, your mark will never lapse for error.
Yeah. Absolutely. So that's the protection in place, is you've got someone at the IP law firm such as yours having a register of what's due for renewal coming up regularly and just checking in against all that.
Yeah, correct. So we have, us and the other big firms have hundreds of thousands of intellectual property cases in our database and people employed to ensure these things don't lapse.
Lovely. Okay, so that's a good peace of mind. So, Chris, really, I guess if we were to provide some summaries and advice for people listening to the show about how to, A, protect their brand, I guess to summarize, it would be build a distinctive brand, register the mark early with a professional, because that then gives you the protection against it lapsing, so you don't have to remember that yourself. What else would you say would be a key contributor to success in that space?
If you are currently trading using a non-distinctive brand, you want to make sure that your usage is consistent so that if you try to register that mark in the future, IP Australia will respect your usage over a 10-year period and might, in fact, let the mark get registered. We've had a situation recently where we've tried to register some trademarks and IP Australia has said, look, your client has not consistently used the one mark over the last 10 years. They've used five different marks, all very similar, but we can't allow you to have a monopoly in a trademark when you don't even use that trademark consistently yourself. If you are in the suburb dental world, then I would probably try and register a logo, get something on the register, which will make it harder for other people to use that same suburb name, but also use whatever you're using consistently. Don't use suburb dental practice, suburb dentistry, and then expect that IP Australia is going to let one of them get through. It's just not going to happen.
I really want to say thank you, because this is, I think, a very important area for all of us who own a business. And I think, as you pointed out and discussed earlier, that I think there's an awareness around the importance of this that's growing, and people are becoming mindful of the fact that protecting IP and brand and reputation is going to be critical, and obviously how it ties into the social media handles as well. And as I said throughout the conversation, you've been extraordinarily helpful getting my stuff done, and I'm grateful to you. So Chris, dentists tend to be tinkerers, inventors, and certainly inquisitive by nature, and oftentimes, you know, some of the dentists I've encountered invent stuff. And so I guess one of the other forms of intellectual property that people would want to protect would be an invention or some sort of methodology. Can you just talk us through how to protect that?
Yeah, sure. So we've talked today about trademarks and about brand, and now we're talking about a different form of intellectual property right, which is a patent. We can get a patent for novel inventions that take something that went before and make an inventive step into something new. Now, I'm not a patent person, but with your audience of tinkerers and improvers, if you were to take a piece of machinery and get out your own equipment and change that machinery in a way that causes there to be a new way of working, then definitely you could seek patent protection for that new way of working. And if you were to get the patent, you would have a monopoly in Australia on that particular piece of equipment. You could also potentially get a monopoly for a method of working if that method involved that new piece of equipment. What you can't really get patent protection for is perhaps you've worked a way to run 15 more patients through your practice every day. That's not a patentable invention. Perhaps you've worked out a way of making more money using a billing program or something. That's not patentable. But a new piece of equipment would definitely be able to be the subject of a patent. The key messages and the key take home for people with patents is you need to get your patent filed before you start telling people about your invention. It has to be novel, and that novelty has to be anywhere in the world. So even more important than a trademark, where you can file a trademark anytime you want, right? You can file it 50 years after you start. With a patent, you have to get it filed before the invention is released to the public.
And that's because
the law of patents requires novelty, and novelty means not exposed to the public generally.
Got it. Okay, cool. So that's patents, but what about, you spoke about, you know, if you develop some sort of methodology, and yeah, this is probably going to copyright space. What if you've done some stuff that's unique, you've published some content around that? Tell me about copyright protections.
So copyright is the only form of intellectual property that's not the subject of registration in Australia. So copyright protection is gained by you as soon as you reduce a work to material form. So if you create a six-page document, you own copyright in your six-page document, and if someone reproduces that document, it's a copyright infringement.
Okay, so going back to the website sort of stuff we spoke about earlier, I've come across a handy blog or whatever it is, and I copy and paste the text into my own, change a couple of words, not materially, but that's copyright infringement, basically.
That's a straight up and down copyright infringement. The biggest myth in copyright is the so-called 10% rule, where people believe they can change a work by 10% and not infringe. Copyright is a qualitative test, not a quantitative test on infringement. You don't calculate it on the basis of a percentage, but basically, have you taken the essential part of the work? And if you've taken the essential part of the work and then changed it 50%, you're still infringing.
Yeah, okay, all right. So that's really important for someone who's written a book. You know, I've written a book, and interestingly enough, you and I both saw parts of that book turn up on someone else's thing, and we had a bit of a conversation around that, especially because they were trying to claim that the advertisement that we'd run was infringing their copyright. But ironically, the stuff that they'd highlighted as the infringement was part of my book that I'd published prior to theirs. It was a bizarre scenario. What other sorts of bizarre scenarios do you see in that regard?
In the copyright space, you have this problem now with digital works that people just cut and paste images, throw them on a website, they cut and paste text, put it on a website, and no one tends to take responsibility, there's less of a thinking around, am I infringing copyright on the web, because it's just all there. But it's still a copyright infringement, and you can still be caught, and you can still theoretically be sued for an injunction and damages. So in setting up a practices website, you need to make sure that everything on that website is original. And if you are going to reproduce an article from The Age saying how great your dentist practice is or whatever, you need to ask permission to do so. You need to get a license. And just because it's like a television show mentions you, doesn't mean you can just record the television show and put it on your website. That's a copyright infringement.
So it's really interesting then. So you see these guys that might appear on, I don't know, 60 Minutes or some other show similar to that, and it might be on their website to provide some sort of social proof or some sort of quasi-testimonial, which not so relevant for the dental practice because we can't have testimonials or purported testimonials. But for someone who's not in that space, then you're really, if they've just lifted that off 60 Minutes, even if they're the guest, that's still a copyright infringement.
Yeah. You'd need to ensure that Channel 9 had given you permission to reproduce that work on your website. Of course, if the television program has put it on their website and you link to their website, that's not a copyright infringement. Linking is not a copyright infringement. Reproduction is an infringement.
Got it. Cool. Good distinction. Chris, we've covered trademarks, we've covered patents, we've covered copyrights. Any other forms of intellectual property protection that we should be thinking about?
The only other one is the registration of design. And that's linked to the patent. And if someone was to create a new tool, you could get a 10-year protection in Australia for the look, that three-dimensional look of that piece of equipment. So that's the only other one that's available to you and would probably have limited value to this audience. But if someone did create something new that was patentable, there's probably a registered design in it as well.
If you were to leave the audience with just any last little thoughts, what would you want to leave the audience with just to get it sorted?
Look, I think it's not something that should be left too late in the context of a business. If we're talking to people who are about to enter their own practice for the first time, you know, spending $1,500, $2,000 to get a trademark registered with a professional at the start can save tens of thousands of dollars later when 400 meters down the road, someone opens with a very similar name to yours. So often we find in the game that people kind of end up spending far, far more than they should because they never did the right thing in the first place. And I realized that when opening a practice, there's a whole lot of expenditure to have to get yourself set up. But investment into your brand is key, especially 2018 going forward, you know.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And as we get into a more sophisticated, more competitive marketplace, I think that is going to be, you know, really, really important to have that brand protection. So, Chris, firstly, thank you so much for coming on the show and spending some time with us. Your insights are always well received, and I know when we're at the DPO conference, your talk was one of the really popular ones. So I heard the feedback around that, and I completely get it. And in terms of the work you've done for me, I'm really grateful to you for that as well. So for people who want to find Chris, you might want to head across to klgates.com. And if you're thinking about protecting your brand, your IP, I would encourage you to do that sooner rather than later. As Chris has said, a little bit of an investment up front can save a huge loss down the track. And I think a stitch in nine saves time. And there's a lot to be said for just getting on with it and getting it done. So, Chris, thank you, mate. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your insights.
All right, mate. Thanks so much.
Cheers, Chris.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.